I have a very dramatic announcement. So anyone with a weak heart should leave now.
Unreal. Revolution. Revolution. Uncensored. Revolution. Revolution. Unfiltered. Revolution. Revolution. Unchanged. Revolution. Revolution. Unadulterated. Revolution. Revolution. Unbelievable. CliffCentral.com. Revolution. Revolution. Revolution.
A very, very hearty welcome to all our listeners around the globe this afternoon. You are listening to Professor David Block, and as always, you and I shall be looking up. The global feed is called Looking Up with David Block. Allow me to give you some contact details, as always, as to how to reach us in studio. I have the most fascinating guest here today, and I'll be introducing her in a moment's time. But let me just give you some numbers and contact details as to how to reach us. To reach us in studio, I know Bonda's going to reach us in studio today. It's 0861-555-189. That's 0861-555-189. The Twitter handle is at cliffcentral.com. The Facebook WeChat ID is Cliff Central. And those are certainly the most popular ways and methodologies of reaching me. So, my universe, the universe which I study, the universe that I look up to, the universe in which I live, move, and have my being is, of course, the universe of the stars, the universe of the galaxies, the universe of the planets, and much, much more besides. But, of course, that is my theater. That's the theater in which the professor just loves to be, to enact the awesomeness of the glory of God as I research his cosmos. Now, I came across a very interesting quote, which our esteemed guest showed me this afternoon, and it really resonates with my soul, and so I'd like to read it before I introduce my guest, because today broadcast is entitled, the feed is entitled, Theater and the Mood of the Age, Theater. So, as I've said, I have my theater above, and but of course the theater's below, on terra firma. And so, Duncan, what do you think of this quote? I mean, come on, just listen to this. The theater allows us to converse with our souls, to passionately pursue and discover ways of living with ourselves and others. We are all artists, and theater is a language. We have no better way to work together, to learn how to learn about each other, to heal and to grow, penned the words of Michael Rodd in 1988. And what resonates with your soul in that? We are all artists, Duncan, and theater is a language.
What resonates with me, Professor, is the fact and the freedom of expression and finding yourself. Mm-hmm. That's what I can take from that extract.
I just love that. Freedom of expression
and finding yourself.
All right, now listen to this. I have in front of me, sitting here in studio at cliffcentral.com, Inga James. Now, if this CV does not get you to run up and down, if this CV does not ignite your neurophysiological processes, then you need to apply for a job at FBOB or Doves. You did. I mean, Duncan, just listen to this. I mean, it is just extraordinary. Inga James's studies in the performing arts started after school in dance and drama at a Pretoria Performing Arts College in the year 2000. She obtained a BA degree in languages at the University of Pretoria in 2003 and a PGCE in education at the UJ in 2004. She furthered her studies with an honors degree in drama at WITS, where I met her, 2006. specialized in drama and education in 2009. But just listen to this. Just listen to this. She's performed as an actor, a dancer, a voiceover artist, and a movement artist. Wow, Duncan, this is amazing. Her major theater productions include The Lord of the Dance, a classical retelling on the original Irish poem by Sidney Carter through dance, movement, and drama. Inga has performed throughout our country as an actor, as a movement, and as a mime artist, and as a voiceover artist in a touring production for Wycliffe's The Chained Book. I mean, this is just stuff that dreams are made of.
Yeah.
Hey, Duncan, I mean, just this is stunning.
I feel like I haven't lived yet, Professor.
Well, I feel I haven't studied yet, Duncan. I feel I need to become a student all over again. Mm. I mean, just listen to this. She's gone to the States. Her theater work there has extended in the States. Listen, Duncan, she was cast as Mary Warren at the Masterworks Festival in The Crucible, which was directed by John Kirby, you know, the director of Narnia and Deja Vu and The Count of Monte Cristo. I mean, it's just too much for me. You know, recent film work includes the role of Leanne in a drama web series. This is who we're interviewing today. Recent film work includes the role of Leanne in a drama web series called Finding the Father. Oh, Inga James, we are just so honored to have you with us today. We're so excited. We're just so thrilled that you could find the time to be with us here on Cliff Central this very special day, theater and the mood of the age. And it's a singular joy to have you on my program.
Good day, Professor. It is truly a privilege to be here. And yes, I'm looking forward to the interview.
Great stuff. So let's jump straight in. So Inga, as you've heard, has been a student of the performing arts for some years. Well, that's just putting it mildly, right, folks? And has done a lot of research on the theater. Now, what's interesting is this. You know, Duncan, one of the key words, right, in our society is transformation. How do we transform? How do we transform inside? How do we transform outside and so on? Now, her research, Duncan, is focused on one's potential to act as an agent of transformation. So there's just so much to unpack in this little piece. Inga, please tell us more about yourself, about your journey with the performing arts, and then specifically focusing on theater as an agent of transformation. And just take your time and just captivate us in your inimitable way.
Thank you, Professor. Well, it really all started with a dream as a young girl. When I saw the stage, it just really called to me. I've been in love with the performing arts since a tender age. I directed plays at school.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Was part of productions there, and that went on to studies in the performing arts after school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always think that one thing that makes you tick, that makes you stand up at 4 o'clock in the morning without having to be paid, that passion in your belly, that is really the thing that brings life to you and to other people.
Brilliant.
And, so that's really what I went after. And just in line with that, I've read the book The Dream Giver by Bruce Wilkinson. And he tells the story about Ordinary, and Ordinary comes home to his dad and just tells him about this big dream. Mm-hmm. And his father says to him, "I'm not surprised to hear you say these things." And I'm quickly just reading an extract from that. Mm-hmm. And he says, "You're not?" "No," his father said. "You've had that dream ever since you were little. Don't you remember? You used to build that same dream with sticks and mud in front of this very house." Mm. And that is really how I feel.
"I have a dream," said Martin Luther King Jr. That's what you're saying, indeed.
Absolutely, and that's where the journey of theater started for me.
The journey of theater started with the dream, Duncan, which you've discussed so many times, and the passion, which you've discussed so many times, Duncan. Dragon, getting up at 4 a.m. and just feeling, this is my theater.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just loving the performing arts as well. I went on to ask the question about theater and its transformative ability. And, you know, when
now
I
tell
go-
us about that. That's fascinating. I've never really thought of that. Theater being an agent of transformation. Is this inner transformation, outward transformation? Tell us about this.
I certainly will. So my question was... How is it possible for transformation to happen in a theatrical context? Mm-hmm. And how theater's approach to audience members engages them as sentient human beings? Mm-hmm. So over and beyond its acclaimed entertainment value, mm-hmm. can theater impact us mm-hmm. to such an extent that there's some kind of a change within us, within mm-hmm. our behavior, within our thought processes, mm-hmm. within our belief systems? Mm-hmm. What makes theater so very powerful? Mm-hmm.
This is just awesome. And do you believe, I mean, we'll get on to this just now, but, you know, in a nutshell, do you believe that one can go into a theater and come out actually transformed, spiritually, mentally, physically? Can you believe that theater has got this inexplicable magnetism, as it were, to it?
Dr. Block, that's definitely what we're going to be exploring today.
Yes, we'll be exploring all of this. The agents of transformation. You know, Duncan, I'm sure you and I, we've gone to certain theaters, we've gone to certain films, and sometimes we just touched. We don't know why we touched, but we just touched. We somehow sit there and we transformed. We come out weeping. We don't know why we're weeping, but we come out transformed because the people who have been in theater or on the film, in the film, have actually touched our lives to the very cause of our beings. Have you had any such experiences, Duncan?
No, definitely. That's true, Professor. I think it's the connection as human beings we make with the actual artists.
Yes.
But I sometimes wish that feeling could just last longer in me.
Yes.
Once I've watched like a brilliant piece, yes. a movie, or a theater experience.
Yes.
I just wish that yes. feeling that it evoked in me could yes. last longer, Professor.
Yes. I think that is so true, Duncan. You know, may the feeling last longer. Instead of telling me, may the force be with you, which I have great problems with, because as a professor of applied math, I don't know which force you're talking about, and I certainly don't want some forces with me at all. But the force that you're talking of, the awesomeness of the feeling, that is just stunning, and that's just your world, Inga. Now, I'm very interested to unpack this and to explore this, and so there are two elements, as I understand. I had the privilege, listeners, of looking at Inga's thesis before we stepped on into theater this afternoon. And one thing that struck me as I just quickly looked through her thesis was that she uses this terminology and has chapters on it called applied theater. And I'm extremely captivated by that. But rather than me giving it away, why don't you unpack that?
Certainly, yes. During my studies, I came across this concept of applied theater.
Tell us what it is.
Okay, certainly. So basically, applied theater is theater that is applied for social change and activism. Mm-hmm. It has the central aim to bring about a transformation of some kind. And I'll quickly unpack where that came from. So during the 1960s, with the worldwide political uprisings, all of that filtered through to the world of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed the role of theater forever as we then knew it.
Mm.
Theater activists pioneered new avenues of performances. They really wanted to focus on the needs of the present day issues and communities, and to address social issues in the communities.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is they took theater and they introduced unconventional performance methods, which I will also get into. But really just that the focus of applied theater is to go into the community at ground level and to bring about a social change.
Mm-hmm. So now let's unpack this. How does this, first of all, let's start here. In the audience are people, and every person has an emotional center. Every person has a rational part of the brain. You know, I think of the great astronomer Galileo Galilei, and, you know, using his rational brain and then, you know, flitting over to the book of scripture and, you know, using his non-national, you know, I'm just enamored by this. Now, you know, Duncan and I, for example, going to a theater, we have our brains hopefully with us. And although some of our students leave them at home. And so there's the emotional side, there's the rational side. How does this all apply to applied theater? Because obviously you're trying to dart in on the emotions, right, and bypass the rationality.
Absolutely. So basically within applied theater, what really happened was that theater practitioners started making use of what they called interactive theater methods.
Wow, that's interesting. I never heard of that, Duncan, have you?
No, it's like 3D for the theater, maybe.
Yeah, no, please tell us what that is.
Yes, so what basically happens...
What happens to me if I'm sitting in an applied theater?
Well, Professor, you will see that the divide between yourself and the actors,
yes,
will no longer be there.
Really? So, how does that happen?
So what we know as the unseen fourth wall, where there's no eye contact between
you. Unseen fourth wall. Wow, Duncan, this is extraordinary. Yes?
So where there's absolutely this divide between yourself and the performance area,
yes,
and the actors, you don't make any eye contact with, mm-hmm, them. Mm-hmm. All of that has changed, mm-hmm, where the actors will now actually make direct contact with the audience. They will directly speak to the audience. There will be direct eye contact. Mm-hmm. And the audience actually becomes like a third character. They collaborate then, mm-hmm, in the final script of this production. Mm-hmm. So there's an interactive engagement with your audience. You no longer just sit as a passive viewer and watch the performance, but you, mm-hmm, become part of the performance through, mm-hmm, these interactive theater methods.
And how does it actually work? I mean, yeah, I'm sitting in theater. How do I actually, how do I, suppose you're on stage, how do I secure eye contact with you? I'm still not quite on par with this because I'm only a professor.
So basically what the actors will do is they will actually address the audience directly and ask them questions directly, uh-huh, as the characters. Uh-huh. There's also what they call hot seating. That's another interactive method.
What's hot seating?
That is where the audience gets the opportunity to interview the characters.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And ask them questions.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yes, ask them, mm-hmm, questions about their decisions, about, mm-hmm, their beliefs, about the emotions, mm-hmm, so they get an opportunity to talk to the characters, mm-hmm, directly. Mm-hmm. You also have what we call role play, where members of the audience can come up to the stage and they enroll as the character.
Oh, wow.
Making decisions in that moment as the character. So these are a few examples of, mm-hmm, interactive theater, mm-hmm, methods, mm-hmm, that applied theater practitioners have started employing.
Hmm. I just think this is fascinating. You know, Duncan has just put up something which I just think is so appropriate to all of this. It's a little book called Theatre for Living by David Diamond, Theatre for Living. And the subtitle is The Art and Science of Community-Based Dialogue. But there's something quite interesting which I'm reading here. And I quote, "A curious but effective blend of artistic autobiography, theatre and social activism theory, and a toolkit of methods for using theater," here it is, "using theater as a praxis for social transformation." So, in other words, not only can the audience interact with the role players up on stage, but can they actually interact while they're watching the play?
Yes, that depends on the interactive methods that have been introduced and how it's been laid out.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely there is that element of the audience participating, mm-hmm, actively, mm-hmm, and altering the final product of this production.
Mm.
So they really become part of the production.
Mm-hmm.
And in this, under the umbrella of applied theatre today, we have what we call community-based theatre for development, theatre in education, playback theatre, even drama therapy. All of these are different types, if you will, of theatre under the umbrella of applied theatre, once again with the vocal aim of trying to bring about some kind of change in behavior or belief through what we call interactive theater methods. It is used today really to address social issues, issues in South Africa with the youth, issues such as HIV and AIDS, trauma, social behavior. A group, a theater group can go into a school and put on a production about a theme such as bullying and have the kids interacting with the characters.
Okay, now how would that work? Because as you might not know this, you probably don't, but you know, I severely bullied at school, very, very severely so. I hated rugby with a passion, Duncan. As you know, I was, you know, and, you know, de main manner were always the rugby players.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it came to choosing prefects, it was the main manner, the manner with the balls. Well, that doesn't sound too good, but the person with the, you know what I mean, the rugby ball. Duncan, I guess that the professor thinks too far sometimes. So, yeah. So, in other words, here I was, the person without the balls, the rugby balls. And so now, suppose I was suffering, which I'm not, but suppose I was suffering from deep down hurts, from bullying. How would this therapy theater work, Inga?
Okay, well, a theater production could go to a school and set up a scenario of where bullying is taking place, and with elements that the audience can really relate to.
Right.
So a storyline and, and characters.
You know, and how would this story unfold? How would it be used as a therapy?
Okay, so within the scenario that is being played out, what the theater group is really looking for is learning to take place within that context.
Yes.
And it's really, if you think of the psychologist Freire, who said that learning takes place through doing and active participation. So let's say there's a scenario, a storyline, because we all make sense of our lives through stories, you know, of bullying, some scenario that's played out. What they could, for example, do is bring some of the kids up to play or enroll as one of the characters, and what decisions will you make in the scenario?
I'm
asking the audience members questions about the story, about the characters, and really creating awareness within the kids, creating a space for them to actively participate and learn through doing, through being involved in that setup.
Now, let's also take, I mean, you know, say high school kiddies. You know, I remember, Duncan, walking past the gents at a certain venue once, not too long ago, and there was a sign on the door, and it said, "Apologies." So I looked at it, and it said, "We apologize. The condoms in the toilet for the last 2 months have been faulty. We apologize." So you're dealing with people with HIV and AIDS, and so it's very prevalent. You mentioned those words earlier. They feature very prominently in your thesis. How's theater used there for, you know, therapy, for education and so forth, applied theater, that is?
Professor, yes, I did my case study on one such theater group that actually goes into schools, and they want to inform learners about HIV and AIDS and to teach them about this. And
this is amazing.
You know, it has been documented that in South Africa we have some of the highest rates of infections in the world, with about, well, these were the rates when I did my study, so they, it could have altered, but about 260,000 children under the age of 15 years that are infected. So, you know, the numbers just increase day by day. But really, these theater groups go into the schools, and through interactive methods, they want to educate the learners about sexual behavior and, you know, HIV and AIDS. So, as I said, my research then was specifically observing one of these groups going into the school and trying to create that learning environment.
And do you find that there is actually a difference, that people who've been under this umbrella come away with a different, not sexual orientation, but a different way of thinking about sexual encounters?
Well, I think it definitely opened their eyes. My thesis was a qualitative research approach as opposed to a quantitative one. And I really observed the engagement levels of the children, of the learners, you know, during the production. So I observed the list, the learners, and I really looked at and analyzed their engagement levels and how they engaged in the scenarios. There were also questionnaires that were filled in afterward, and it was really the in-the-moment observation, you know, in this theatrical mm-hmm. spaces mm-hmm. And just really creating awareness within them. I think that was one of the main things, mm. You know, within these scenarios mm. and these productions. So you know, as I spoke about this, I've been exposed to the umbrella of applied theatre and interactive methods, and they certainly have proved to create the most amazing learning spaces mm. for audience members. Mm. But Professor, there was still something mm-hmm. nagging mm-hmm. at me. Theatre, I'm very passionate about theatre. Mm. I love sitting in the audience, you know, that moment when the curtain opens, that expectancy. But there was something that said to me, there's something about theatre that makes it really, really powerful, mm. something embedded in it. Mm-hmm. And that is what I was after.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I further research took me a little bit further, which I will talk about now. But yes, the applied theatre was really the background to that. And what I really also found was that it engaged the rational side of the mind, and where we also make decisions, and just creating that learning space where I can practice, so to speak, how to act and react in real life, giving mm. me a rehearsal space for real life, mm-hmm. creating awareness, making me think actively mm-hmm. as I participate in these interactive theatre methods.
Mm-hmm. Professor.
Yes.
In our modern time, we've been bombarded with something called reality TV,
mm.
where supposedly someone is followed by a camera for the whole day, mm. and you actually get to see the real side of them.
Mm.
And in that way, it's not giving back to the community in any way.
Mm.
But with this whole applied theater,
mm.
you can see that this is really reality mm. TV, and mm. it's helping solve all the challenges that mm. mostly people can face.
Because it's really real.
Yeah.
Mm.
So this is reality theater.
What are your comments on that? Because I remember watching these reality shows, not for long, because my boredom set in after 2 seconds. But, you know, I mean, the point was that you saw people being televised and, you know, one going to a bed with another one and some. And so I just feel that there's so much more to life, as Duncan says, and that, you know, what's so much more to life is indeed life, soul, movement, dance, art. And what's your comment on Duncan's thought? I think that is just so appropriate.
Well, theatre definitely creates that space. Theatre is like a mirror for us. A
Duncan,
mirror of ourselves.
Theatre is like a mirror.
We get to observe ourselves. So absolutely. And you know, you can go to the movies, but in the theatre space and context, it's the in-the-moment live performance.
Mm.
For me, there's nothing quite like that moment, that real live moment. Yes. So it definitely is associated
with the giving back life. More to the community rather than these reality TV series that we see.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you are sitting in the theater space. You are experiencing those emotions, that storyline in the moment. It's just a magical moment.
You are listening to Professor David Block, and I have the privilege of and singular joy of interviewing a masterful young genius in the world of theater, in the world of movement, in the world of visual arts, in the world of dance, in the world of emotion, in the world of impact, in the world of homing in on one's emotional zones rather than your rational zones. Theater is like a mirror. Wow! So, we need a little break because we've just got so much buzzing in our heads. Just before we take a music break with Inya, you can reach us in studio on 0861-555-189, 0861-555-189. And, of course, the WeChat ID is just the most favorite way of reaching me at Cliff Central. I see Inappropriate's with us, Duncan. Inappropriate, he says, welcome, Inappropriate. Always glad to have you. Inga, this person's name on WeChat is actually Inappropriate. So it's not as if I'm reading wrongly. His name is Inappropriate. He says, Prof, well, that's just awesome, Inappropriate. Sad to be getting away. Wow, that sounds as if you're migrating to Mars. When you tell an astronomer you're going away, we have thoughts in our neurophysiological processes that you're going away for a long period of time. Tell me on WeChat if you're going to Mars, because I might join you. But you'll always update yourself with my podcast. That's the impact of this, isn't it?
Futuristic.
That's right. It's futuristic. He can download the podcasts wherever he is around the world. He says, keep well as I will be with you in spirit and always look up. Wow, wow, what do I say to that except inappropriate? You're amazing, and I trust you're enjoying the show. And now, before we continue with Inga James, Enya. Ah, Armstrong.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night.
Well, there's only one, Louis Armstrong. I remember listening to those songs when I was still a young boy in Krugersdorp, Mohali City. In those days, it was not a city. And Duncan, who is Mohali?
Professor, I've stayed there most of my life, and I just don't know who this Mohali guy is.
Maybe somebody can help us. Mm. I need to understand where I was born, but I know where I was born, except that I'm not sure why it is called Mohali. You're listening to Professor David Block. My personal webpage is www.davidblock.co.za. That's www.davidblock.co.za. And my Twitter handle is at Starry Galaxy Man. At Starry Galaxy Man. We're having a most fascinating chat. Discussion, in-depth discussion, more than in-depth discussion with Inga James, who comes from the world of, you know, theater, who comes from the world of dance and form and art. And, oh, I'm just so touched to have Inga James with us today. She's really, if you listen to her words, it makes you think. Now, Inga, of course, you've been speaking to me about theater as an agent of transformation, and you've told us a little bit about that, and then we looked at applied theater. But now, what did you conclude? I mean, you've done a whole project, a whole thesis here in front of me. You know, can theater be life-changing? I mean, can it really change your life? Or do you just go in, as Duncan says, and you come out and perhaps the feeling lasts for an hour? You know, you think of it. You know, I suppose, Duncan, when I went to theater as a child, you know, I'd go in smart clothes. Do you know what I mean, Duncan?
Yeah.
And then my daddy would take me to a restaurant. And by the time I'd finished my food, I've forgotten what I've seen at the theater. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, Professor.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's fascinating. We asked my one son, what movie did you see in the morning? And by the evening, he'd forgotten. So he didn't remember the title of the movie. So that's the world we live in, just info, fast info. Here you're sort of touching the soul of people. What did you actually conclude, Inga, with regard to theater being actually not just momentarily changing of the mood, but life-changing?
Professor, I'm so glad you asked me that question. This really excites me. Anyone who's been to theater will know that theater has the capacity to involve the senses, your emotions, your intellect. And in my studies, I came across supporting research that states the following. As human beings, we actually have two brains, or two minds, if you will. The rational and the emotional brain. And this is beautifully addressed in Daniel Goleman's book, called Emotional Intelligence. Mm. It's really a worthwhile book to have on the shelf. And he talks about these two minds, these two brains, the emotional and the rational. And he goes on to say that although we operate from these two and they are in tight harmony with each other, they are semi-independent faculties. Mm. But when we make decisions, it is the emotional mind that wins. Mm. That is where we have the deepest seated conviction of our decisions. So when there's a child in danger, you will place yourself in a situation of danger to save that child. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about scenarios.
Yes.
Your scenarios, just where you make a decision based on your emotions. Mm-hmm. And he actually.
An instinct almost.
Absolutely. And he goes on to explain that in his book, Emotional Intelligence. Mm-hmm. And that got me thinking. Mm-hmm. Because theater's most powerful attribute is its ability to engage both faculties, the reason and the emotions. So if theater has this ability to talk to your heart and your mind, making it a language of the soul.
Oh, Duncan, those are those words.
Beautiful,
I love.
Beautiful.
It is a theater becomes a sensory vehicle with the ability to trigger emotions without which we really make any decisions. Theater accesses your thoughts and your feelings, and it speaks to the psyche of the human being. So basically, theater, which can be very thought-promoting, thought-provoking, and emotionally absorbing, has this capacity to involve the senses and to speak directly to your emotions where you make so many decisions, where you make your core decisions. And from that stance, I just realized for me, theater definitely has the capacity to change lives, to bring about a transformation, because it speaks to both minds, both reasons, or at least the faculty of reason, your intellect, as well as your emotions, your feelings. Mm. It engages both those faculties in the moment. And that is why when, you know, with the art, when I listen to a song, you know, and I wanted to phone one of my parents, I'll put it off. I don't have time now. I'm reasoning myself out of it. Mm-hmm. But play a song about, you know, your dad or your mom. Immediately it touches your heart and you are on the phone within 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. The art just has that ability to engage your emotions. And that is, as I said, and as Daniel Goleman concludes in his book, Emotional Intelligence, where we make most of our decisions, you know, 70% of the time.
Duncan's just brought up a beautiful quote of Goleman's, and it's, life without passion would be a dull wasteland of neutrality, cut off and isolated from the richness of life itself, quote unquote. Life without passion. Now, Inga started off her interview with the word passion. Life without passion would be a dull wasteland of neutrality, cut off and isolated from the richness of life itself. So, Inga, what you're actually saying is that there's been a huge change from the traditional theater as I knew it in Krugersdorp, where you went and you saw some production, to what you are doing now. But I think that perhaps I can identify with you if I think of Fiddler on the Roof, for example, if I think of Anna Karenina, if I think of Dostoevsky and so forth, I am reminded that watching Fiddler on the Roof, for example, really touched my emotional center. Also, Duncan, what was this film name where the guy's dancing on the beach? Zorba the Greek.
I wouldn't know that movie. How would I know that movie?
Duncan, you're going to just call up on the little, you know what I mean? You're just going to look on Google now. It's Zorba the Greek. I mean, we'll see what year it was. But I don't know if you've seen Zorba the Greek. But would you concur with me, Inga, that movies like that somehow touched my soul? And I've never forgotten that. I've just never forgotten that. Is that the sort of thing you're speaking about?
Absolutely, Professor. That is the power of the art. in line with that, I would really like to read this quote from Makela, and this really sums it all up for me. He says, "Art has the most wonderful advantage of being able to invade the private world and thinking of the audience. Art can disarm and relax the audience, and then, when all the guards are down, it can throw thought bombs into the heart that will explode with the kick of inspiration and awe immediately, or preferably after some contemplation, sometime later. Propaganda confronts and alienates. Art should disarm and convict." And Professor, you know, the golden nugget that I walked away with from this thesis is the following, that theater is an art form that triggers our emotions. And as a result, it can actually bypass the frontal lobe of reason and speak directly to the heart, to the emotional side. You know, as I said, where we then make decisions. And that for me was really the key to why theater has the capacity to be an agent of transformation for its audiences in today's society.
I'm interviewing Inga James, and I think that if I was not a professor of astronomy, I'd quickly go and relearn my studies, Duncan.
Definitely.
And because this is fascinating, the interplay between the right brain and the left brain, the interplay between reason and emotion. And, the, you know, you spoke about may the feeling last, Duncan, and I think that that's what Inga's trying to do in her world of applied theatre, is it's a very big umbrella, and she's trying to touch the souls of her audience, and to me, I find that absolutely gripping. You've put up a little quote written by, this is from Zorba the Greek and from the book. You have your brush, you have your colors, you paint the paradise, then in you go.
Oh, how do you like that? That is beautiful.
You have your brush, you have your colors, you paint the paradise, then in you go. Or I won't try and pronounce the name of the author because I remember having trouble with this before. Can you, Duncan?
Let me try. It's Nikos Kazantakantakas.
Okay, good. Duncan, you're my linguist expert here. I sometimes get tongue-tied with the long Greek names. But you have your brush. You have your colors. You paint the paradise. Then in you go. Doesn't that speak to your soul? Tell me what that quote does for you, Inga.
Professor, if I think about us having a brush and being able to paint something on a clean canvas, it immediately just you know, makes me think of my passion for directing, where the stage is a clean canvas, and you have that ability to take your brush and paint and create a beautiful world on the stage for others to interact with. And that also makes me think of how each person and each child is actually born with that, so to speak, symbolically, that brush in his or her hand. That passion that they have is really a brush that they can use to create something. And I'm very, very passionate about children, especially, you know, children interested in the arts, but children engaging with that passion that they've been born with, because I believe that is like an artist's brush in their hand, and that they need to create with whatever that passion might be.
Wow, Duncan, I think this is riveting stuff. This is the stuff dreams are made of. I think when Martin Luther King said, Junior, I have a dream, it just fits in so well with what we are just saying today, is he had a dream, and that dream was life-changing. It was to be everlasting, and that's what we're talking about with Inga James today, is each one of us walk along our paths, our dusty roads. We don't always have feelings in our heart of hope and purpose and belonging and of caring. But I've known Inga James for some years now, having been a professor at Wits for a long time. And I suppose, Duncan, that you'll agree with me that we're dealing with somebody's life-changing herself in meeting her. And I'm just so interested, though, Inga, in the fact that my students are so addicted to technology. My students go to the toilet with their iPhones and Blackberries, and they sleep with them, and it's really It worries me. I've said this to Duncan often. It really worries me. I never want to be buried with my cell phone. I really, really don't. Now, we're living in an age where technology is flourishing so much. And my question to you is, given that technology is just flourishing by leaps and bounds, I mean, we can call up any piece of information in the flash of a second. Do children, especially, and adults, is theater still relevant in today's age?
Professor, I would like to answer that in two ways. First of all, for the audience, and then for the people performing in a theater production.
Mm.
You know, as an audience member, when I sit and watch a theater production, that whole experience, no movie or any form of technology can give me that experience. I'm watching it in the moment, going through the storyline, watching the characters create this beautiful story on the stage in front of me. In the moment, that tension, the emotions that I feel in that theater space, you know, no form of technology can actually give that to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then just from the side of the actors, being able to, for me as an actress, when I perform, I see it as a gift that I can give to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, without an audience, there is no theater.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely. Without an audience, there is no theater. Very good.
And, you know, being able to give that gift to a live audience who in a way becomes like a fourth character in your experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that just contributes to the value of the arts. And I don't think today in today's society we often value the arts. It's easily set aside. Theatre is just such a beautiful world that we can create. It is really a different way of picking up that paintbrush and creating a reality, creating a story. And it's through mm-hmm. stories that we make meaning of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
For me, just, you know, technology cannot give you that experience. And being able to sit in a theater and just experience that, it is just, instead of a slideshow, you have a live show.
Mm.
You know, it is enigmatic.
Well, I think that, Duncan, you know, the sort of thing I'm thinking about is, you know, I had a student who was so lonely that even lonely people called him lonely.
Ooh.
And, you know, he went onto the web to try and find a wife. He did find a wife in the end. But the interesting thing was that the wives on the internet didn't satisfy him, if you know what I mean. He missed the technology doesn't carry the emotion.
The intimacy.
The intimacy, the touch, the interaction, the dreaming, the interface of rationality versus emotion, whereas touch does. And so I believe, I fervently do that, however much technology advances, the world of arts, which includes the worlds of theater, will still be so relevant in centuries to come, because these are items which can never be replaced. And if you think of it, you know, with regard to Nelson Mandela, having met him a couple of times, the world was his theater. If you really think of it, if you give it a thought, the world was his theater. That's where he moved. That's where he became himself.
Mm.
That's where he took Grasa's hand and danced. The world was his theater. But his world was a highly focused theater in which he focused on children. And so this is my next question to you, Inge, is should parents allow their children to study the performing arts? I mean, is it a worthwhile enterprise?
Professor, my father had that same question, and he was very concerned when I wanted to engage in the performing arts,
mm-hmm.
you know, and follow that road of study. But the one thing, also once again a golden nugget about drama and the performing arts, is that it's a space where children get to express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if I cannot express myself, you know, I can run into problems later in life. When I get an opportunity, a safe space to express my emotions and my feelings and my thoughts, it just makes me, you know, a more confident person. There are so many attributes and so many life skills that I can learn mm-hmm. in this space. And mm-hmm. and learners who engage in the performing arts get to know themselves far better mm-hmm. than kids who don't. And they really just basically get that space to express their thoughts and their feelings, mm-hmm. which is really one of the main mm-hmm. things for me.
Now, why didn't you – I know that our time is running on and we're going to be playing some music and so on. You showed me a lovely quote before we went on air that really spoke to my soul and my spirit and my entire being. It really was just the most amazing quote. I'd like you to just read it and reflect upon it in our closing moments. I think it was a quote by, was it Kellerman? Or it was one of the quotes, yes, that you had. And it really just, I don't know, it just sums up everything we've been saying today. Why don't you read it to us?
Certainly. I think it's one that I read a little bit earlier, but I'm definitely going to read it again. It is just so beautiful. So it goes to say that art has the most wonderful advantage of being able to invade the private world and thinking of the audience. Art can disarm and relax the audience, and then when all the guards are down, it can throw thought bombs into the heart that will explode with the kick of inspiration and awe immediately, or preferably after some contemplation, sometime later.
Read that once again before we close.
Art has the most wonderful advantage of being able to invade the private world and thinking of the audience. Art can disarm and relax the audience, and then, when all the guards are down, it can throw thought bombs into the heart that will explode with the kick of inspiration and awe immediately, or preferably after, some contemplation.
You know, Inga, I just could interview you for hours, right, Duncan? It's just, I don't know, this is not just an experience, but it's, you know, it's what Michael Rod said earlier, that theater allows us to converse with our souls, to pursue and discover ways of living with ourselves and with others. And, you know, then, as Inga has beautifully said today, we are all artists. And theater is a language. There's no better way to heal and to grow than to work together in the awesome world of touching, of thinking, of feeling, of dreaming beyond the realms of tomorrow. Inga, we want to thank you, Duncan and I and Gareth Cliff and everybody you've met today. You met Gareth earlier, for coming to our studio. I think you've almost cast a spell on our audience. Don't you think so, Duncan? I think it's
absolutely
just been, I don't know, I've been silent much of the time. It's very unusual for me. But I've just been drinking in what she's had to say. Such pearls of wisdom. And we want to thank you so much for taking the time to make our little world a brighter world, a world of touch, of feeling, of passion, of pursuing, and of discovery. You've been listening to Professor David Block. I've had the privilege and joy of interviewing Inga James. And Inga, do you have a web page at the moment or not quite yet?
Not quite yet. I am an aspiring theatre practitioner and I will be, getting that into place.
So the next major production, just in 10 seconds, is The Book in Chains, yes?
Yes, I am.
Just very quickly.
Okay. Yes, I am part of a production, mm-hmm. a forthcoming production called mm-hmm. The Chained Book. Yes, that is one of the productions in which I am currently involved with.
Okay. So it's been a real joy and honor. And listeners, thank you so much as always. I just know this is going to be one of those podcasts of the week, Duncan. I mean, this one, if this doesn't rivet you, then I may as well go and sell flowers at West Park Cemetery. 2 minutes of music. Professor David Block signing out. God richly bless you in your theater of operations. CliffCentral.com